Somewhat successfully established my press credentials. And because you and I have at least one thing in common, which is that all of us deal with language all the time, I thought it might be nice today for me to come to you with some of my language complaints. Certainly not to blame them on you, although, of course, you are implicated. And not that you can help it. I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover, the politicians, the celebrities, and the lawyers. And although their level of insincerity is astonishing, it's still kind of fun to hear them talk. In particular, it's fun to listen to Washington talk. Whenever the issue of term limits comes up, I always tell people the only term limits I'm interested in would be to limit some of the terms used by politicians. They speak, of course, with great caution because they must take care not to actually say anything. Proof of this, according to their own words, is that they don't actually say things, they indicate them. As I indicated yesterday, and as the president indicated to me, but sometimes they don't indicate, they suggest. Let me suggest that as I indicated yesterday, I haven't determined that yet. See, they don't decide, they determine. If it's a really serious matter, they make a judgment. I haven't made a judgment on that yet. When the hearings are concluded, I will make a judgment, or I might make an assessment. I'm not sure. I haven't determined that yet. But when I do, I will advise you. They don't tell, they advise. I advised him that I had made a judgment. Thus far, he hasn't responded. They don't answer, they respond. He hasn't responded to my initiative. An initiative is an idea that isn't going anywhere. When he responds to my initiative, I will review his response, take a position, and make a recommendation. See, they don't read, they review, they don't have opinions, they take positions, and they don't give advice, they make recommendations. And so, at long last, after each has responded to the other's initiatives, and each has reviewed the other's responses, and everyone has taken a position, made a judgment, and offered a recommendation, now they have to do something. But that would be much too direct. So instead, they address the problem. We're addressing the problem, and we'll soon be proceeding. That's a big activity here in Washington. Proceeding. They're always proceeding or moving forward. A lot of that goes on. Senator, have you solved that problem? Well, we're moving forward on that. And when they're not moving forward, they're moving something else forward, such as the process. We have to move the process forward so we can implement the provisions of the initiative in order to meet these challenges. No one has problems anymore. Challenges. That's why we need people who can make the tough decisions. Tough decisions like how much soft money can I expect to collect in exchange for my core values? So that... so that I can continue my work in government. Of course, no politician would admit to such a lowly station as working in government, serving the nation. I'm serving the nation. Another favorite distortion is public service. I'm in public service. I like America, don't you? The food is great, but the public service is terrible. Now, folks, a question for you. Do you think it's possible that one of these politicians, whose judgment is so poor that he honestly thinks of himself as serving the nation, might occasionally be expected to indulge in a little patriotism? Huh? What do you think? Well, of course, not only is it possible, it's inevitable, and that's when he's at his very best. That's when he trots out the really good stuff all across this great land of ours. The greatest nation on earth, the greatest nation in the history of the world. And in times of military crisis, you can be sure that someone in a suit in this town will eventually plant himself in front of a camera and carry on a great deal about the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. Now, normally, during peacetime, the politicians will refer to people in the military as our young men and women stationed around the world. But in wartime, they quickly become our brave young fighting men and women stationed halfway around the world in places whose names they can't pronounce, wondering if they'll ever see their loved ones again. For added emotional impact, sons and daughters can always be substituted for men and women. And so I think we can sum this up by saying that where the military is concerned, the extent of a politician's insincerity can be measured by how far around the world our soldiers are stationed and whether or not any of them can pronounce it. Incidentally, another way of expressing this sentiment is to say we're sending our young men and women to places the average American can't find on a map. I've always thought it was kind of funny and somewhat out of character for a politician to go out of his way to point out the low level of American intelligence when indeed his very job depends upon it. It would seem to fly in the face of that other rhetorical standby of theirs, the American people are a lot smarter than they're given credit for. This is said with a straight face, although it is obvious, of course, that the proposition is being stated precisely backwards. But the politicians, God bless them, or something like that, they're at their most entertaining when they're in trouble. When they're in trouble, their explanations usually begin simply with words like miscommunication. What did you do wrong, Senator? Well, it was a miscommunication. Or I was quoted out of context. Better yet, and more ironic, they twisted my words. Such a nice touch. A person who routinely spends his days torturing the language complains, they twisted my words. Then, as the controversy continues to heat up, he moves to his next level of complaint. The whole thing has been blown out of proportion. It's always the whole thing. Apparently, no one has ever claimed that only a small portion of something was blown out of proportion. Has to be the whole thing. That's because now he's feeling the heat. And so, as time passes and more evidence comes in, he suddenly changes directions and tells us, we're trying to get to the bottom of this. Now he's on the side of law and order. Jiu-jitsu, really. We're trying to get to the bottom of this so we can get the facts out to the American people. That's always a nice touch, American people. In fact, at this point, he might even say, I'm willing to trust in the fairness of the American people. Clearly, he's preparing us for something. And so, when finally all the facts come out and our subject seems quite guilty, he employs that sublime use of the passive voice, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made, don't look at me. Probably someone in my office. Things are moving faster now. Mistakes were made is rapidly overtaken by there is no evidence. No one has proven anything. Eventually I will be exonerated. I have faith in the American judicial system. And that certain sign that things are closing in, whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty? Whatever happened? Well, now, Well, he's about to find out. And we know this must be true because the next thing we hear from him is, I just want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life. I just want to put this behind me. That's an expression we hear a lot these days in all walks of life. From people in all walks of life, usually the person in question has committed some unspeakable act. Yes, it's true, I strangled my wife, shot the triplets, set fire to the house, and sold my young son to an old man on the train. But now I just want to put this thing behind me. That's the problem in this country. Too many people getting on with their lives. I think what we really need more of is ritual suicide. You know, never mind the press conferences. Get the big knife out of the drawer. Personally, what I want to do is to put this, I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life, thing behind me and get on with my life. I'll repeat that for you. Personally, I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life, thing behind me and get on with my life. And just to round out this section, let's hope there's a special place in hell reserved for those who have recently decided to take responsibility for their actions. That's the big thing now, taking responsibility for your actions, like it's a recent discovery. You know, he's taking responsibility for his actions. Well, isn't that wonderful? Ask him if he's willing to take responsibility for my actions, along with my alimony, my car payments, and my gambling debts. Now, continuing with more of these more general language complaints, and forgetting the Washington angle for the moment, I'd like to mention America's love affair with euphemisms and euphemistic language. I think Americans have some difficulty dealing with reality and have invented a kind of soft language to protect themselves. And this tendency to euphemize, if that's a verb, increases, it seems, with every generation. Here's an example. There's a well-known condition in combat when a fighting man's nervous system has been stressed to the breaking point and he's either snapped or is ready to snap. In the First World War, that condition was known as shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language, two syllables, shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was over 80 years ago. Then an entire generation passed, and in the Second World War, the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now, takes a little longer to say, doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high, and the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. We're up to eight syllables now, and the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's absolutely sterile, operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Finally, of course, there was Vietnam, and given the lies surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen, and the pain is now completely buried under jargon, post-traumatic stress disorder. I'd be willing to bet that if we'd still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time they needed it. But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons, I'm sure, is because of that soft language, the language that takes the life out of life. And it does keep getting worse over time. I'll give you a few more, but less dramatic examples. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I was not consulted on this. It just happened. Sneakers became running shoes. Loafers became slip-ons. Motels became motor lodges. Trailers became mobile homes. Truck stops became travel plazas. And used cars became previously owned transportation. Manicurists evolved into nail technicians. At about the same time, store clerks became product specialists and sales associates. Employees became staff. Uniforms became career apparel. Maids became room attendants, and room service became guest room dining. Information turned into directory assistance. Medicine turned into medication. The dump turned into the landfill. Gambling joints turned into gaming resorts. Shacking up, living together, reruns, encores. Encore presentations, forgive me. Monkey bars, pipe frame exercise units. Wife beating became intermittent explosive disorder, and constipation became occasional irregularity. Rainforests and wetlands came into existence because the environmentalists discovered people were not willing to give money to save jungles and swamps. And now, all of this happened in the last 30 years. When I was a young man, if someone got sick, they went to the hospital or they went to the doctor. Now, the health maintenance organization sends them to a wellness center where they consult a health care delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now, the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And we can't really discuss euphemisms if we don't mention that final taboo, death. Used to be that when an old person died, the undertaker put him in a coffin, and we sent flowers to the funeral home where they held a wake. Then after the funeral, they drove the dead person in a hearse to the cemetery, and his body was buried in a grave. Now, when a senior citizen passes away, the mortician places him in a burial container, and we send floral tributes to the slumber room, where the grief coordinator supervises the viewing. After the memorial service, the funeral coach transports the departed to the Garden of Remembrance, where his remains are interred in his final resting place. Some of this language can make you want to throw up. Well, perhaps engage in an involuntary protein spill. Now, if all of this begins to put you in mind of so-called politically correct language, or politically correct speech, then you and I are on the same track. So let's visit that playground of guilty white liberals, the land of the politically correct. In recent years, the PC folks have found some new ways of shading the truth in order to make people feel better, especially minorities. One of the newer phrases making the rounds is happens to be. He happens to be black. I have a friend who happens to be black.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes.
Like it's an accident, you know. Happens to be black. Yes, he happens to be black.
I see, I see, I see.
You had two black parents? Yes, that's right. Two black parents, yes. I see. And they had sex? Oh, indeed they did. I see. So where does the surprise part come in? I should think it would be more unusual if he just happened to be Scandinavian. Another recently favorite term is openly. Openly gay. I have a friend who's openly gay. But that's the only minority they use that for. You know, you wouldn't say someone was openly black. Well, maybe James Brown. James Brown, yes. Or Louis Farrakhan. Louis Farrakhan is openly black. Colin Powell is not openly black. Colin Powell is openly white. He just happens to be black. And while we're at it, when did the word urban become synonymous with the word black? Did I sleep through this, perhaps? Urban styles, urban trends, urban music. I was not consulted on this at all again. Didn't get an email, didn't get a fax, didn't get a postcard. That's fine. Let them go. So I would like to tell you how I handle some of these speech issues concerning minorities. First of all, I say black. I say black because most black people prefer black. I don't say people of color because it's dishonest. It means precisely the same thing as colored people, which is an insult. So if you're not willing to say colored people, you shouldn't be willing to say people of color. And besides, to me, the whole idea of color seems a bit specious, really. I mean, what should we call white people? People of no color? Isn't pink a color? And in fact, white people are not really white at all. They're different shades of pink and olive and beige. In other words, they're colored. And black people are rarely black. I see mostly various shades of brown and tan, and in fact, some light-skinned black people are darker than the darkest white people. I'm sorry, lighter than the darkest white people. Look how dark the people in India are. They're dark brown, but they're considered white. May I see the color chart, please? People of color is an awkward phrase that obscures meaning rather than enhancing it. What shall we call fat people? People of size? I also don't say African Americans. I find it cumbersome and confusing. Which part of Africa are we talking about? Egypt? Egypt is in Africa, but Egyptians aren't black. They're like the people in India. They're dark brown white people. But they're Africans. So why wouldn't an Egyptian who becomes a U.S. citizen be called an African American? The same would apply to South Africa. Suppose a white racist from South Africa becomes an American citizen. Couldn't he call himself an African American? If for no other reason than just to bother black people. And what about a black person born in South Africa who becomes an American citizen? Is he an African American or is he a South African American? Or is he simply a South African American African American? You know, it's just so much more tedious liberal labeling. Liberals should be taught that labels divide people, and I think we could probably do with fewer labels, not more. Now, one more group, the Indians. I call them Indians because that's what they are. They're the Indians. There's nothing wrong with the word. First of all, it's important to know that Indian, that word, probably does not derive from Columbus believing he had reached India in 1492. India was called Hindustan. More likely, the word derives from Columbus's description of the people he found here. He was an Italian who spoke very poor Spanish, and in his written accounts, he called the Indians una gente indios, a people in God. In God, indios, Indians. It's a perfectly noble thing. And I simply can't justify this awkward phrase, Native Americans. First of all, they're not natives. They came here from Asia over the Bering Land Bridge. In fact, there are no natives anywhere in the world. Everyone is from somewhere else. All people are refugees, immigrants, or aliens. If there are natives anywhere, it would have to be people still living in the Great Rift Valley in Africa. So everyone is just visiting. So much for native. As far as calling them Americans is concerned, well, how can I say this? We steal their hemisphere, destroy 500 cultures, kill 20 million, stick the rest of them on the worst land we can find, and then as a special bonus, we name them after ourselves. It's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. The truth is, most Indians are insulted by the term Native American. The American Indian movement will tell you that. If you wish to please Indians, try calling them by their traditional names, Pawnee, Mohawk, Navajo, Seminole, and so on. Now, just rounding out this theme and to make you a little more uncomfortable, here are a few further examples of tortured modern language designed to soften reality, make people feel good, and in general dress things up a little. Somewhere over the years, the word cripple has been lost. We don't have cripples anymore. Turns out we never did. All this time, they were physically challenged. It's an attempt to make people feel better. Physically challenged. And how's this one? Differently abled. And if you insist on using differently abled, then you must include all of us. We're all differently abled. Each of us can do things the other can't. Differently abled. The word crippled is not a dishonorable word. There's no shame in it. Jesus healed the cripples. He didn't engage in rehabilitative strategies for the physically disadvantaged. And we have then this continuing problem with the word fat. I use that term because that's what fat people are. They're fat. That's why we call them fat people. They're not large. They're not stout. They're not chunky, hefty, or plump. And they're not big-boned. Dinosaurs are big-boned. And they're not necessarily obese. Obese is a medical term. And they're not overweight. Overweight implies there is some correct weight. There is no correct weight. Heavy is also a misleading term. An aircraft carrier is heavy. It's not fat. Only people are fat, and that's what fat people are. They're fat. They're not exempt. They're not, for example, gravitationally disadvantaged. I offer no apology for this, by the way. It's not intended as criticism or insult. It's simply descriptive language. I'm not comfortable with euphemisms. I prefer seeing things the way they are, not the way some people wish they were. Midgets and dwarfs are midgets and dwarfs. They're not little people. Infants are little people. Leprechauns are little people. Midgets and dwarfs are midgets and dwarfs. They don't get any taller by calling them little people. I wish their lives were different. I wish they didn't have to walk around staring at crotches all day. But I cannot fix that, and I'm not going to lie about what they are. There are some people who playfully refer to them as vertically challenged. They're not vertically challenged. The flying Walendas were vertically challenged. The people who built the Empire State Building were vertically challenged. No shame in midgets and dwarves. I do have a closing. I realize my time is a little longer than I expected. May I do this closing poem? This, thank you, Larry. This is Try Stopping Me. Now, thank you. This is just a poem I've written recently. It's called I'm a Man for the Millennium, and it tries to celebrate some of the language we hear all around us. I'm going to use my papers on this, although it'd be good if you kept rolling for me anyway. I'm a man for the millennium. I'm digital and smoke-free. Start again, George. You can edit this. I'm a man for the millennium, digital and smoke-free. I've been inputted, outsourced, uplinked, and downloaded. I have software on my hard drive, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm factory authorized, returnable, fully equipped, built to last, and I'm definitely biodegradable. My output is down, but my income is up. I'm tanned, rested, and market-tested, user-friendly and lactose intolerant. A diversified, multicultural, postmodern deconstructionist. I'm a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, high-concept rageaholic, and I have a love child who sends me hate mail. I'm an alpha male on beta blockers, a bottom feeder and a top gun, a Bigfoot rainmaker. I give soft money with hard cash, and my revenue stream has a cash flow of its own. I'm ahead of the curve, riding the wave and pushing the envelope. I'm on board, on point, on message, but off drugs. I take power naps. I take victory laps. I've got a personal trainer, a personal shopper, and a personal agenda. I'm a totally ongoing slam dunk no-brainer with an outreach that's proactive. I eat junk food, I get junk mail, I buy junk bonds, I watch trash sports. I've been dumbed down with smart bombs. I'm in denial, I'm in recovery, but I'm out of the loop. I'm also on the bubble. A high-tech lowlife, anatomically, ecologically, and politically incorrect. An entry-level man with no exit strategy. Low rent, but high maintenance. Upscale, but down home. I got a minivan with a microwave from a megastore in the mini mall. I've been to outer space on the internet. I'm a non-believer and an overachiever, emotionally deprived and market-oriented. I have hardcore software because I use the F word in my email. I'm new wave from the old school, and if I'm not at ground zero, you can reach me at square one. I'm gender-specific, voice-activated, capital-intensive, heat-seeking, faith-based, and work-related, but I'm definitely not group-oriented. I'm online, I'm in line, but most of the time I'm out of line. I'm cock-blocked and ready to rock, rough, tough, and hard to bluff. I put the pedal to the metal, party hardy, and to me, lunchtime is crunch time. Thank you.
Here he goes, George Carlin, the Pope of the bunker here. Yeah, nobody can beat that guy. And he says it pretty much the way it is. There might be a few things I disagree with him about, but not that big a deal. Good old George. Too bad he's gone. But we'll keep playing some of his stuff on here to remind you of what somebody who's really free is like. Yeah, he's free. Most people aren't free. And we're none of us very free. But I think George Carlin was one of the most free people in the country, or maybe the world. How about that? So you play this for your friends and relatives, no matter what their politics are. Well, I think a couple of weeks ago I told you that the British oddsmakers, the gambling people in Britain, had picked Donald Trump to win, and everybody thought they were nuts. They also picked Brexit to win against the EU. And I said, boy, that's pretty wild. Now I know that I should have found out how to bet on that gambling scheme in England and put some money into it. Geez, if I'd have put $1,000 in on it, I'd be a rich man today, boy, I'll tell you. I don't know exactly what the odds were, but they were pretty high. So I was wrong most of the time. They were right. I didn't feel he'd win the primary, and then I felt he wouldn't win the election. I figured they'd stop him at the Electoral College, but I want to tell you what I think happened here. And some of the news people, you didn't hear much about whites during the campaign, either the primary or the election, until last night. And then everybody was talking about the white working class. They were all over the place with the white working class. I think it's genetic, because they were talking about the white working class coming together. The white working class really getting in there together and working together. But what I think it is genetic memory. I think you can't get all the way out of being white. I mean, some people can, maybe even half the population. But there's millions of whites out there that can't get rid of their whiteness, and they can't stand it, and they'll make all kinds of excuses for it. But when it comes down to the wire, even if they don't even realize it, they're voting white. And I was quite amazed at that as I thought that up. I said, gee whiz, there may be some hope for us yet. Yeah, there may be some hope for us yet with the white people going back to, like Jack London, to the genetic heritage. And it works on you whether you like it or not. And there's some racism, white racism, in all white people. I don't even give a shit if they're married to a black person. They work it out differently there. Usually the white woman beats the shit out of the black guy, or he takes out his hatred on the white woman. So there's racism everywhere, no matter what. And the people who are in most denial, and I submit are the most racist, are the liberal faction. I always call them the Jewish liberals. So, not to be confused with the real honest-to-goodness 19th century liberal. That's right. Because there's nobody that tries to hide racism quicker than a liberal, so-called, as I call them, Jewish left-wingers, as opposed to Aryan left-wingers. Because there is a sizable percentage of Aryan left-wingers. And many of them have good ideas and so forth. You know, they're more honest about the environment. They're more honest about capitalism. They're more honest about a whole lot of things. And those are the people we should talk to and deal with. You'll get a lot more farther than you will talking to these right-wing conservatives. Especially south of the Mason-Dixon line. Not picking on them, but I think I could get a lot farther talking to left-wing whites with good instincts than I can with these crazy-ass right-wing conservatives. Because you see what they want to do? They want Trump already. We got to have a bigger military. And I even talked to some people locally. I said, well, our military has been disintegrating or going downhill. Well, where do they get that shit? They get it off the television. They don't have any way of knowing what our military position and equipment is. I mean, hell, we got hundreds of ships all over the world. We got military outposts, 500 of them, somebody said. And but these people, they buy into, these right-wingers buy into this. We don't have enough guns. We don't have enough rockets. We don't have enough atomic bombs. Israel's got more than we do. So you see what I mean? I'm like George Carlin. I don't feel comfortable with any of those people, right or left. I only feel comfortable with myself. And you should feel comfortable with yourself. But for most of them, forget it. I think if I had 10,000 people who thought along the lines of Carlin on most things we would agree on, we could get someplace. That would make a great party. The political parties are bullshit. Now everybody's excited about Trump. And I'm glad he beat the bitch. No doubt about that. She is the filthiest bitch I've ever seen around politics. There's been people like her, but she's been more out in the open. She's the master of the Negro race. They fawned over her. She hugged them, kissed them, danced with them. And I'm sure she would probably have had oral sex with them if they'd have asked. And but I don't think, you know, she didn't really fool the Mexicans, mestizos. Actually, she didn't fool the true white Hispanics, because people, conservatives, don't understand there's white Hispanics from Spain and all over, and South America and all over the place. They don't seem to understand that. Well, they got to be stupid, because you can look at a white Spaniard and say, hey, that's a white Spaniard. His background is Spanish. Or his background is Colombian. But he's a white man. Okay? I saw this gal that won the senatorship up in Nevada. I was expecting to see a brown mestizo. She's as white as I am. She's as white as you are. But her last name sounds like a mestizo. And one thing the right wing racial struggle has never promoted and got out there is the difference between a goddamn colored mestizo and a white Hispanic. And it's retarded the advance of the right wing for decades, long time. You know, South Americans, didn't matter whether they're white or not, they were bad. They were colored, no matter if they were white and blue-eyed. So millions of Hispanics have been thrown into the gutter to combine with the mestizos, because they got no place else to go, and then they expect them to vote non-white. Well, Hillary was wrong about that. She gets some of them, of course, especially the ones that want to become politicians, but she's not fooled. She didn't fool true white Hispanics for the most part. But we don't leave the white Hispanics any choice, because they've got it down. Not even that they are white, that they're Hispanic, but they're Latina. Latina. What's that horse shit? That's come about in the last 30 years. I think they've used it before, but not to the point now. You know, this is camouflage. It's to camouflage the mestizo. He's not a mestizo, a race of many colors, a mixed race. He's not Hispanic. He's a Latina. That sounds like swinging a bell around. Ding, 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 ding. He's a Latina. Fuck a Latina. White Hispanics should be on our side. I don't think they're ever going to be really on the right-wing side. Because the right-wingers still treat them with contempt. Unless they, you know, follow them around like a doggy, you know. Like some of these black conservatives. I do hand it to the black conservatives. They did a good thing for themselves. I remember when they started latching on, clear back in, late 60s and 70s. All of a sudden, there'd be one or two around the country become black conservatives. And, oh, my God, the white conservatives would run to them, hug them, kiss them, invite them to everything and all that. They'd go around the country speaking. I know. I was there when they came around. And like Julia Brown, who was an FBI informant, and I forget right now. I've told you before this. One big black guy who used to be a communist organizer. He was a head thumper. He came around. John Birch Society had a lot of these people. Then they had George Schuyler, who was somewhat of a black intellectual, if there is such a thing. Well, I'm sure there is. And his daughter, she was half white. And they promoted Schuyler, and he wrote some books, so they pushed that a lot. But I could see the future, what was going to be, that the blacks that had any brains were going to say, hey, man, I think we could go over there and get into that conservative stuff, and they'll treat us like kings. They'll even have sex with us because we're smart Negroes. And that's what they did. Whites never really respected black nationalism or black separatism, which they should have. What do we want if we don't want separation? I mean, what the hell is it all about? More blacks want separation than whites. Bigger percentage. I know I've spent many times on the radio shows, black radio shows, and I got along fine with most of them. Because when I said, you know, you should have your own country, your own police, your own army, our own everything, and we shouldn't interfere, and I don't want a slave, that drive me crazy, having a slave around the house. And they understood that. And they respected me because they could sense I was telling the truth. I had nothing to gain. But the right-wing racists never figured that out. And I don't think they're going to figure it out, because the right wing is going to die in this country. True, there'll be other areas where racial people can operate. We will operate in different, probably a populist movement that we can sit down with people of other races and figure things out. And not be bored with the politicians and the big shot and the ruling class. In other words, we need to make decisions based upon our own working class interests and not on the ruling class. The ruling class fuck us every time. They don't give a shit. They fuck blacks. They fuck Mexicans. They fuck Asians. They don't care. So don't you think it's time, if we're going to talk to anybody, we should talk to those people and get out of this ruling class control, this capitalista control? I think we should. I am. See, I go where I go, and if anybody follows, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine too. I don't wait for somebody else to say, Tom, I agree with you 100%. I'm going to follow you to the ends of the earth. I get an idea. If I agree with it and believe in it, I do it. Let the chips fall where they may. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Yeah. But for the most part, Trump's going to turn out like most politicians. He's going to get up there. He knows he's going to have to deal with those bastards. He couldn't get anything done in Washington without dealing with the lobbyists and those people. So if you're thinking that the only thing I'm glad about, he whipped Hillary. I never despised a woman in my life like I despise her. In fact, I've never despised a woman, but I did despise Hillary Clinton because she was so rotten to the core, so absolutely rotten to the core and using people horribly. Yeah. Donald Trump may be a good organizer or business builder, but I want to tell you, until you, like the there's a song that says, until you played in California, what is it? It's anybody's game. You haven't played anywhere at all. Well, until you play in Washington, D.C., you don't know shit, because it is an absolute suicidal hamburger grinding machine for the ruling class. And it's in their best interest to see things confused and turned upside down. So if Donald makes it through 4 years, I don't think he'll ever want to come back. He'd say, I want to build a building. Fuck this. But we'll see. I think he's going to have fun. He should have fun. And he does fulfill my chaos factor. I think it turned out a little differently than I expected, but the chaos factor's still in force, so don't worry. But don't get stuck on any politician, especially a billionaire. And, of course, Hillary had billions, too. So there's only a few ways they get those billions, and it's not like the average working-class guy that's going to work every day. You better believe that. And you got to make deals with people. That's all right if they're honest, good people, but these guys make deals with the rottenness of the rotten, the ones that send all the young guys over to occupy country in the Middle East, kill all the people, bomb everybody, fuck, kill the kids, who cares, let's, capitalism marches on. I've told you before, I think I'm sort of a racial socialist, not a national socialist, a racial socialist, but that's using the good part of socialism. There's been so much added to socialism and it doesn't mean much anymore. They kept talking about who was a socialist. Obama's a socialist. Hell, there's all kinds of socialism in this country. The whole military is nothing but a welfare organization. The military is a socialist operation. This country is full of socialism. All you people think, oh, we got to fight socialism. Bullshit. If they really fought socialism, you'd be wanting to have a revolution. You wouldn't have any Social Security. There's hundreds of things that are socialist in this country. So why don't everybody come out and admit it? Good socialism is better than capitalism. Yeah. Bad socialism is bad for everybody, because it's not really socialism. But socialism only going to work in a pretty much all white or all black or all Asian country, because it's tribal. And good socialism can't work in a multiracial society. People keep saying, I can't understand why those Norwegians and Swedes do so well. And we do try the same thing, and we do shit. Well, it's mixed race countries, and Sweden and Norway and all those countries become more mixed race. Well, it'll be the same with them. It'll go down the tube. You know, sort of like in Canada, where they got a lower population, guaranteed health care works fine, or works pretty good, works better than what it works down here. I know I've been treated under Canadian medical system when I traveled in Canada years ago. Well, let's see here. What else can we talk about? But don't run off now thinking this is it. We've hit nirvana. Trump is going to make everything right. There's no way you can make things right in this country. It's too late. I keep telling you, it's too late. No matter what he says, and no matter what anybody says, it's too late. Oh, I got to check how the Dukester plastic man did down there in Louisiana. I understood he didn't have shit to shinola, but of course you don't know how the boat went, so I'm going to look that up and see how he did. As I recall, he pulled about 5%, but who knows? He's riding on the shirt tails of Donald Trump. He might have got a big surge, and hell, maybe he's senator right now. And if he becomes senator, I'll be damn glad I'm clear up here in Indiana or someplace else. Boy, I wouldn't want to live in Louisiana if he became the senator. I know that boy. He'd be making deals like you can't believe. And once he got up there a couple of notches, he'd be gone forever. I got several emails this morning about how wonderful this campaign was and Trump winning. And I said, just be careful to these guys. I said, be careful. Watch it. You're dealing with a billionaire here. Here I just got another one in here from a guy. Champagne, Tom. Dump will not disappoint you. No, they never disappoint me because I realize how rotten politics is. You know, you right-wingers live in a dream world. You're ready to follow anybody that whispers in your ear. You know who my favorite American is? White American, or one of them. He's right at the top. That's Huey Long, the Kingfish. I remember when I was in Louisiana working on Duke's campaign back in the 70s. I admired that state capitol in Baton Rouge because it was designed in the 30s and it looked just like a German building in Berlin in the 30s. Beautiful place, absolutely gorgeous, with fascist symbols all around. Well, Huey Long knew how to share. He was a real socialist, a good socialist, a non-Jewish socialist, and he spread the money around, even among the blacks. I mean, he bought, got them school books, and he built the roads better, and he did all kinds of things for the people of Louisiana. Lone Wolf sent me this. The first quote is the biggest truth about how things work in this country. The second shows you just how radical Huey Long was. But he didn't just talk, as you already know. He literally transformed all aspects of Louisiana with success. Just like Hitler transformed Germany. Well, I don't necessarily agree with all that. Long wasn't racial, but at least segregation was still in place. And good God, if we could just get a racial version of Huey Long today, we would have our leader, our man, but he would need to be have a damn good personal security force. Well, he did at the time, except they screwed up one time and that Jewish dentist shot him mortally wounded him there in the Capitol. I stood on the spot where he was shot. Anyhow, but you see, Huey Long didn't invade Alabama and kill half the people in Alabama. Huey Long didn't have a private army to invade any other state and kill people, or even in his own state. So you can't compare Huey Long to Hitler. All the Hitlerites out there and the Hitler worshippers that don't seem to understand that, due primarily to Hitler, millions and millions of people died. White people. White people. I run into these Hollywood Nazis for a long, long time. And they worship Hitler, but Hitler was responsible or partially responsible for the death of millions of white people because they weren't Germanic Only at the end did he drag some of the other Western countries' peoples into it, and most of them died on the Eastern Front. So I picked Huey Long and so forth. So anyhow, that's from Chris in Alabama. Now here's what Huey Long said. Quote, "They've got a set of Republican waiters on one side and a set of Democratic waiters on the other side. But no matter which set of waiters brings you the dish, the legislative grub is all prepared in the same Wall Street kitchen," unquote. That was during a campaign of Huey Long. And that was in 1932. Here's another one. Quote, "A mob is coming here 6 months to hang the other 95 of you damn scoundrels, and I'm undecided whether to stick here with you or go out and lead them." That was Huey Long from the Senate floor. So Donald Trump, his character is nothing new. This is right out of Huey Long's book. He was bombastic, too, and he was a threat to Franklin Roosevelt. And probably that was the reason he was assassinated. Franklin Roosevelt was afraid politically of Huey Long. It'd really be interesting to have seen, if he hadn't have been killed, how far Huey Long would have gone. But probably eventually someone else would have got him. When you get to that point of power, you got to take them out before they take you out. You got to have a preemptive strike on all your enemies. I mean your important enemies. If you wait, they're going to get you. Don't be timid about killing, because in politics, people kill each other all the time. I mean, politicians are killed, numerous politicians are killed every year. And they say, oh, the plane wrecked, oh. Oh, he drove his car into the river. Oh, he had a heart attack. Believe me, murder is quite common in politics in this country.
"What's this community? You have spilled blood to protect Cheyenne. It's not just be glad to think of blood origin. Blood doesn't make family. Tribe makes family.